Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
No, just trying to get through the cursed episode. I love our episodes. Like, I love doing this podcast, but every once in a while, there's just one episode that comes up and it is legit cursed. Even when I texted like Alyssa, our producer, I was like, we've been trying to record this specific episode for like 2 weeks. And it is just everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. And this happened one other time when Alyssa and I were trying to do the Hunger Games because like Rise of the Reaping came out. I've never read the Hunger Games. And so she was like, let's do some episodes about, I didn't start reading until my 30s, right? Like, that's the whole journey is like, I met A Court of Thorns and Roses and then I met everything else. Dang. And then here we are today, right? Like,
that's insane.
Was wild, right? And exactly. And so she was like, let's have you read The Hunger Games. And as you're reading, we'll do some episodes on it and like talk about your journey. Because I've seen the movies, but I just have never read the book. And every single time we tried to record, everything went wrong. So that episode today still has never made.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's insane.
I refuse to give up on this episode because it's literally multiple chapters.
Yeah.
Steep dive.
I remember whenever my, like, for whatever reason, and like specifically in sixth grade, like we would all have our own like unofficial book club. And whenever like the cool book was, the whole class started reading it. And so eventually, like whenever The Hunger Games became popular, it was like right before the movie came out, like the whole entire class was reading The Hunger Games. And we were trying so hard to convince our teacher. We're like, can we please have a class field trip and go see The Hunger Games? Like, it's educational. It's serving a purpose. And she's like, I don't know. And we're like, please. And we're like, even if the school won't approve it, because like, sure, it's violent, but like, we're reading, so it's fine.
Yeah,
but we're like, can we all just like coincidentally just show up to the theater on the exact same day at the exact same time? And she's like, maybe.
Did you ever go?
No, we did not go as a class. But
I thought you were gonna be like, we went.
No, but the whole class, we all suffered together having like a little reading slump because we're all like, well, what do we read now? And then one kid who's like the fastest reader in class, he essentially had us gateway from The Hunger Games to the Maze Runner series. Have you ever read that one?
No.
So that's like a good stepping stool. But he did not have a filter. So like at the very end of the first book, like something big happens and he's like, oh my gosh, da 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 da. And we're all like snapping our head to him. We're like, shut up. We're all not there. Some of us are still in The Hunger Games.
We went to wildly different schools. Nobody was reading in high school.
I mean, in high school, was reading. In high school, no one read, but like in middle school, that was like the thing.
Wild. I love it. I'm glad that you did that. I did not read any of, I didn't read like the Hunger Games. I didn't read Maze Runner. I didn't read Twilight. None of it. I read nothing.
Read Twilight. But I did Hunger Games, Maze Runner. I think it was like towards the end of middle school. We all got into Divergent and we did get to do a school field trip with that one. I think I saw it like once on my own, and then another school trip was like, oh, we can like go see the Divergent movie. We were like, say less. So I saw that movie twice in theaters. And there was a trend. It's like loosely a trend because the books were new-ish. Mm-hmm. But there was like a – you have not read Divergent?
Mm-mm. I've seen the movies. I saw all the movies.
Okay.
I wasn't like under a rock. I was just like – I wasn't reading.
There's the character whose name is Four.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there was unofficially like a 4 day. So it'd be like the fourth day in the fourth month. And so you were supposed to either dress as as a Dauntless, which is the people that wear all black and they're like the cool, like crazy kids. And then Amity, I think, is the other one that was all gray, and they're like very selfless and just very reserved. And so like me and I think three or four other friends like did the 4-day at school. Mm-hmm. And so I think like some of them were gray. I was like very pastels, very bubbly, quiet, teacher's pet. And so I come up to school one day wearing all black, and everyone was like, is she okay? Like, is she going through something? And I'm like, it's Dauntless Day. What do you mean?
Oh my God. You're hilarious.
I love a good
reason. I thought you were going to say you were gray. Like,
no, I went full black. I have black jeans, black t-shirt, leather jacket. I had my hair in a ponytail. And it was dyed like ombre, so it kind of looked like Triss's hair color. Mm-hmm. And I was like this close because I did get the DVD. And for whatever reason, the DVD came with like the three bird tattoos. And I was like this close to doing the temporary tattoos. I'm like, no, that's too far.
Too much. Need no to dial temporary it back. Tattoos. Don't want to be a rebel.
I know. Could only rebel so much.
Yes. Yeah. If you go too far, you can't come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I say as I'm wearing a ribbon with my hair and braids into my
tell us why you're in the ribbon. I'm sure that people if you're watching the video, you're like, what is she wearing? So tell us, for those who are not watching, and you're just odd, like, you know, on Spotify or Audible, Madison is wearing the cutest outfit today. What do you have going on?
Yeah, so we were gifted very, very cute jewelry, and the jewelry I picked, I'll kind of do like a little one of these
little show and tell
just flash
cute. The ice.
They are called Inner Peace, just like Nesta's sword. So I'm just like, I gotta go full Valkyrie for this one. Mm-hmm. So I may or may not have ran to Michael's really quickly, bought some ribbon, threw on my Bat Boys t-shirt, and we're going full Valkyrie today for this one.
You look great. You went all out, and I absolutely love that.
So yes, again, I love a good excuse to dress up.
Oh, of course. Yes. 100%. So yeah, our good friend Nikki over at Trippy Velvet sent us the cutest bookish-inspired jewelry this week. So we wanted to wear it on an episode and show you guys. So we each got something different, including our producer, Alyssa. She sent things something to her, which was really, really nice of her. She does custom inspired jewelry. So if there's like bookish jewelry, so you can check out her website. That is going to be in our show notes. And then when you go to her website and you check out all the things, you can use Goodish Girls 15 for 15% off at checkout. So you get a little discount. So she is on all the social medias, the TikTok, like I'm a 90-year-old TikTok. Woman. She's on the TikTok, the Instagram.
I love it.
I am an elderly woman.
You guys heard about the TikTok?
The internet thing that's going on? No, so she's on TikTok. She's on Instagram, all the socials. And then again, she has her website, which will be in our show notes. So thank you so much, Nikki, for these cutish pieces. I got this cute necklace. Thanks, it's very cute. It has like a little fox on it. Yeah, it has a teeny tiny little dagger, which I don't know why I'm so obsessed with it, but it's so small that. And cute.
That's so cute.
Yes. I wish I had a real teeny tiny dagger.
Oof.
One day. I'll get one now. Day. Now I have to, so that way I have – it's like for my charm necklace.
I mean, hey, I know that they're out there because the amount of cosplayers I see that commit with like their fake prop weapons, I'm mm-hmm. like, rock on.
Yeah, 100%. No, I fully agree.
Ooh, especially every time I see someone cosplaying Selena Sardothian, chef's mm-hmm. kiss. I'm yes. like, I want to have that level of confidence.
I think you could do it.
Maybe one day.
Put a blonde wig on.
I tried going. I did my hair ombre, which is like as close as to blonde as I got. And I'm such a pale person that it just washes me out.
That's fair. That's fair.
I don't know. I'll just like tap into that, like that one, like those three chapters where she has red hair. Just like, it's the scene where it's like, who's mm-hmm. that? Aideen smiled. Rowan. I'll just do that.
Yeah, I love it. So during last week's episode, we got the opportunity to experience our journey like through Crescent City smelling just like Bryce Quinlan with a custom perfume from our friend Sierra at Wonderwick. Because we loved this scent so much, we are actually doing a giveaway through our Instagram this week. So we're very excited. We're pairing up with Wonderwick. So to get your chance to score a Wonderwick gift card and some custom Goodish Girls merch, here's what you need to do. Find the post on our Instagram, Goodish Girls Pod or The Wonderwick. The link is going to be in our show notes to both of those pages, so it'll be easy access. Make sure you like the post. Make sure you're following both the Goodish Girls podcast and Wonderwick. Tag two friends in the comments who might want to enter the giveaway as well. And for extra entries, you can share it to your story or your page on Instagram. And join us live on October 8th at 7:30 Central Time to find out who your lucky winner is. Now, this is the first time we're going to go live.
It's going to go great.
Go easy on us. Give some grace. It's going to be great, I have no doubt. But they're Madison, I'm not gonna lie, to be honest with you guys, we mess up a lot on this show. Alyssa has her work cut out for her. We are starting a Patreon very soon, and I want to put all of our bloopers on there, just all the time that we look like so stupid,
so hard.
It's gonna be great. There's some really funny moments that will make you guys laugh. So one day you might find them all on the Patreon.
Yeah, there's one. For whatever reason, whenever we filmed it, my brain didn't click. I'm like, oh yeah, this part is in fact going into the episode. But it's whenever you tune into our Bookish Gentleman video, I may or may not be quoting alongside our dark romance pick for that week. And I was like rewatching the episode. I'm like, oh, that is in there. Whoops.
Oh, right. We're recording. I forgot.
I was in my own little bubble.
That's really funny, actually. I didn't notice that.
Because, like, I knew parts that were going to get cut out because I was being extra silly. But then that part, my silliness did, in fact, make the cut. I'm like, oh, this shall be on the internet forever and ever.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. There's one that I kind of want to put on our Patreon. It was our Alyssa and I's interview with Stella Bloom. So there was a really funny moment. I got super excited about something. I don't remember what I got excited about, but I was like, I got to go. Like, I gotta go. I died.
Yeah.
And then simultaneously, like, as I was saying that, I hit the cord on the computer to my, like, where my camera is plugged in, and my video went away. And
but Stella that's was iconic.
Like, Stella was like, did she actually leave? And I was like, no, I'm here. I just had to reset. So, of course, I had Alyssa, like, edit that out. I was like, no.
No, you should have kept it.
And now it's going to go in the Patreon so you guys can watch it.
That would have been hilarious to keep in.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't do it. I was like, no, we'll just take that out. It's fine. But I will release it to you guys one day. If you want to see it, you can go to our Patreon when it's launched and watch me just scare Stella Bloom. And there's also a moment where there was like lightning and all three of us got scared.
Love that.
It was wild. We were like, everything's fine. All right, guys. So again, join us for our giveaway. Make sure to go to our social media page, follow both the Wonderwick and the Goodish Girls podcast, and join us live on October 8th at 7:30 p.m. Central Time. Check your time zones. I'm bad at that. All right, let's do this. Welcome to the Goodish Girls podcast. My name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
And we are hanging out on our guided tour of Crescent City, chapters 33 through 38 today. Chapter 33, we are at the Oracle, which is very exciting because I think that this is kind of a big deal. So Hunt entered the Oracle's chamber, and the first thing he states is that it smells of sulfur and meats. And if you guys have never lived in an area that has sulfur or like in a house that has like sulfur in your water, literally rotten eggs. If you're like, what's sulfur? Like, if you lived in like city water, it usually doesn't have that because they will like process it out. It's not harmful if it's in your water. It just is so unpleasant. Like, coming from like a small rural area up in Idaho, it's so gross. Yeah. So sulfur and meat. Awesome. Step one, walk in. I think I would walk right out. I'm like, I don't need my Oracle red. It's fine. I'm good. I'm going to go.
It's like, I came, I saw, I conquer, you know what?
Well, I came, I breathed, I left.
Yeah. Just do a fortune cookie style. Like,
yeah, can you actually just email me? Can you just email text me a good voice memo so you can put the drama in there, Miss Oracle? So it is noted that the Oracle had an offering to Ogenis, who again is the keeper of mysteries, in case you guys forgot that. So the goddess is also the goddess of the seas, and again, keeper of mysteries. I believe the oracle claims the house of many waters. It doesn't actually like say which house they claim, but that's what I want to believe, is that if they were to claim a house, they would claim the house of many waters. Thoughts on that?
I'm just puzzled by, I just need more information on Ogenis in general. Whenever Hunt was like recalling everything he's gone through with the rebellion, and he specifically was like channeling or like questioning Ogenis, I'm like, but why?
Yeah, it is interesting. Well, and the reason why I think the Oracle, if they were to claim a house, would claim the House of Many Waters, is because if you're in under the House of Many Waters, it's river spirits, water beasts, kelpies, mare, nymphs, nox, and others watched over by Ogenis. Like, it says that specifically.
Maybe the House of Ogenis is just for the shady people.
Maybe.
Like, the people, because I also, like, you know who would be besties with the Oracle?
Who?
The Cereal. 100%.
They're actually distant cousins.
100%. Because they would just be talking trash, talking tea, and they would have a field day. I could just see it now. The Oracle, like, meeting up with tea with the Cereal, be like, girl, I met with this one chick, totally yelled at her. She blinded me. I was out sick for a week. It's fine. I
can't believe this.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think I would fit right in for tea time.
Oh, I would.
I love to hear the tea.
There was one fantasy ball I went to, and they did have a Cereal come in and like was walking around. And so I'm like, oh, I got to ask a question because like I'm here. So why not?
Yeah.
And so I asked the Cereal, I was like, so everyone, like, Rhysand claims that he's the most handsome High Lord, but, like, who do you think the most handsome High Lord is? And they're like, you know what? It's a great question. Many people sleep on Tarquin. I'm like, you know what? You're so right. He does not get enough love and appreciation.
You're not wrong. That I don't disagree. I love that. So one thing that the Oracle says is that he said, I wondered when the shadow of death would darken my chamber. The Oracle is kind of wild because they're basically the middleman between the gods and the person in front of them, like a conduit, as they would call it, right? Who, and this is going to be more in our like House of Theories and lore area, but if, who is the Oracle really? Like, they are such a mystery to me that it's weird. And it even states in the book that says, the Oracle smiled a smile that did not wholly belong in this world. And I think that is fully an Easter egg that Sarah is laying for us.
Ooh.
I don't have an answer in Theories of Lore, so you guys know when you get there. Like, I still have the questions. Yeah. So, I don't know. So, she tells Hunt to ask her a question, and he does. He says, why does someone want Luna's horn? She said it had already been asked 2 years ago, and she refused to answer it. She didn't say that she did not know why, but she said that she refused to answer. However, when he does finally ask who is doing this, they say that it is veiled, and they cannot see. So, like, Oracle can see all except for, like, this random stuff that's kind of veiled, which I thought was also interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know if they're telling the truth.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm like, is it veiled? Yeah. Or is it conveniently veiled?
I think that seems just out of convenience.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Again, stirring the teapot.
Mm-hmm. No, you're not. I don't think you're wrong at all. So, they said, to open the doorway between worlds, they wish to use the horn to reopen the Northern Rift. So again, they asked her a while back, like, why, like, what's happening? And they didn't answer. And now they're choosing to answer, which I guess is progress, right? Mm-hmm. He's asking now. So the horn's purpose was not only to close doors, but to open them depending on what the bearer of it wishes. So they also said it can be healed. But again, they say it has been veiled. I cannot see. None can see. So I thought that was also interesting that, like, is it that they cannot see? Is that someone is, like, making it to where they cannot see? Like, how much power does this oracle actually have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it also says, the legends say that it cannot be repaired, but the oracle states that those are just that, legends. Which tells me, hello, that can totally be repaired.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just saying, oh, that's just rumors, basically. Yeah. That's just a myth. Like, you know, in lesser words. So Hunt is less than thrilled in these answers that he gets, and he gets a little snarky with the Oracle. And they tell the Lord of Lightning he should be grateful that he learned anything at all. Which, yes, go Oracle, snaps for you. Put that man in his place. Love you, Hunt. Oh, it's gosh. Like, still, though.
Oh, Lord.
I'm all for putting a man in his place.
I know so, you are.
I know. It's so bad. It's so bad.
I love it, though.
I'm here for it. So the Oracle asks if Orion Athalar, who, again, is Hunt, in case you guys forgot his, like, original name, his real name. So the Oracle asks if Orion Athalar wishes to see his own future, and we are reminded that no one has spoken that name in over 200 years when his mother was alive. So that tells us that the Oracle is pretty well-knowing, right? Because, like, no one has said that name. Hunt does not want to know what the Oracle sees for him, which she's, like, taken back by it, right? Because everyone wants to know. Everyone's like, yeah, tell him my future. And he thanks the Oracle and attempts to move on with his day. He's like, thank you. Like, I'm good. And then the Oracle attempts to stir the pot once more and says, did Bryce Quinlan tell you what occurred in this chamber 12 years ago? Like, okay. Dangling the carrot. Like,
and again, starting drama for no reason.
She's like, did you hear actually that what happened?
Because I'll tell you. The High Lord, but not specifying which High Lord.
Yes, exactly. You'll be safe. So Hunt informs her that that is Bryce's business, and he has no right to know if she does not want him to, which snaps for Hunt.
That's on respect.
Good job, buddy. That was a test. You're passing. And so, honestly, the Oracle is, again, really powerful, but I am fully labeling them as a Gossip Girl.
100%.
Yes. Gossip Girl Oracle. And they say, you remind me of that which was lost long ago. I had not realized it might ever appear again. That's a pretty powerful quote. Before Hunt left, he was given one final piece of unsolicited advice from the Oracle. Do yourself a favor, Hunt Athalar, and keep well away from Bryce Quinlan.
Hot take, but that might be the smartest thing the Oracle has ever said in my book.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, I love Bryce, but every now and then I'm just like, Miss Ma'am. Because I'm not going to go into it because it'd be spoilers. But man just wants a peaceful life. And Bryce is like, no. Let's start a new adventure. And I'm like,
start a new adventure. He needs to get out of his shell. Bryce is doing him a favor.
Hunt needs a vacation. He needs a Jet 2 holiday.
He does need a Jet 2 holiday. Yes. They don't have a family of four, but so they won't save any money.
Hey, Hunt, Justinian, Victoria, Isaiah, there you go.
Bet. Perfect. I love it. And that, it's a quick chapter, chapter 33. A lot of information from the Oracle, a lot of stuff that's going to go into our house and theories of lores. So if you want to dive deeper into that, make sure to stick around for that portion. So chapter 34, Madison, take us away.
Yes. So this chapter opens up with Hunt's meeting after he met with the Oracle. He's meeting with Bryce and Rune. Essentially, he tells them everything that he heard. And right now they're suspecting that the rebel group that's associated with Briggs might be behind it. And that potentially they could be wanting to repair the horn to open a portal to hell to form an alliance with the princes to take down the Asteri. And they're also speculating that at this point that potentially the murders that have been happening could be considered the rebels eliminating any loose threads and making sure that their plan or their cause isn't getting out into public light. As they're kind of deciphering all of this, Rune mentions that they would need a Veneer's help. And I believe it's Hunt saying that maybe they're using a witch to summon the Crystallos. And Rune says, unlikely a witch was involved. They only obey the Asteri. They've had a millennia of unbroken loyalty. We'll touch more on that in the House of Theories and Lore. But Rune, little smarty pants, also says... If someone could repair the horn, I don't even know how that would happen or that would be possible. I read some mentions of the Horm having a sort of sentience to it, almost like it was alive. Again, we'll be touching that again on the House of Fears and more, because my man is using his big brain and I love it. But even though Hunt and Bryce are just like, I don't know, Rune proposes seeking out the help of a medwitch. And again, Bryce and Hunt are like, Rune, it's an inanimate object. And he's like, but hear me out. So even though Bryce and Hunt are kind of just like not on board with the plan, Rune's next plan of action is he's going to go try to find a medwitch to help see if the horn can be repaired that way. Mm-hmm. But after they kind of split up, Hunt asks Bryce why the Oracle would warn him to stay away from her. And then Bryce kind of gives us a little bit of lore into Fae culture. And she says that when girls reach their first cycle or they become a teenager, they go to the Oracle for a glimpse of what power they might ascend to when they mature, so their parents can plan unions before the drop even occurs. So essentially, again, the drop, you've heard a million times, I'm going to say a million one times, you drop into your power and essentially it's within yourself and you have that set level and it varies for everyone. And your ascent is essentially you have to come back to the real world in order to actually claim that power. Otherwise, you're stuck being kind of like in death limbo for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But again, Bryce is saying that the Oracle is simply used to see what power people can achieve. Back in the day, today it's kind of now just like a little tradition that people go to in order to see what career they'll be most useful in the future. But essentially, once upon a time, Ember wrote to Bryce's dad to schedule for Bryce to meet with him and so that she can get in with her face side of her heritage, because her mom kind of got a feeling that maybe she's actually holding Bryce back. So they set up this little meeting, and Bryce is telling Hunt what happened at her Oracle meeting. She says that when she looked into the smoke, the Oracle screamed and tried to claw her eyes out. She went blind for a week. Whenever that happened, because it caused such a big ruckus, dear old dad stormed out of the VIP exit so no one could associate him with Bryce, and he abandoned her at the temple. And so essentially, whenever Bryce got back to dear old dad's house, she found all of her things left out on the curb. Rune tried to help Bryce, but his dad forbid it. So the only thing he was able to do really was to slip Bryce some money to get fair to go all the way back to Ember's house. And Ember was furious, as she should be. But that's essentially the story that Bryce tells Hunt. But as they are doing their research back at Griffin Antiques, Hunt does find a vase depicting the Crystallos being slain by brute force. This is a vase that comes all the way from Parthos. Keep that location in mind because you'll be hearing that more as the series continues. Hunt also says, which is so funny, because he essentially finds this photo on the computer and they're trying to dig more into it. And Bryce is like, hold on, let me do it for you. And Hunt says, I might have been born before computers, Quinlan, but I still know how to use them. And
such an old man.
He's such an old man. But then I was thinking about it because I'm like, you honestly like went through so many changes. And I'm like, how? I want to know like how easily he accepts change, because man has lived through decades, literal decades.
You know, and I think that's a good question for like not only all three series, right? Mm-hmm. Like Crescent City, Throne of Glass, and ACOTAR, but like fey worlds in general, like fantasy worlds in general, people like those who are immortal, like how they have to accept change, right? Mm-hmm. But also in, and this is an ACOTAR like spoiler, so just if you haven't read it, then
plug the ears,
skip by like 30 seconds. But like, if I remember correctly, they even know that change is slow in that world. If I remember correctly, when they're talking about the Valkyries and not getting their, or not the Valkyries, I'm so sorry. They're talking about the Illyrians and the female Illyrians getting their wings clipped, he's like, it's change is slow, like progression is slow here. So is that just for the Illyrians, or is that, oh, you have a face like you know something.
Dude, this point makes me so freaking mad at Resand, because he's like, oh, I want to change the culture and like ban the wing clippings. And I'm like, just do it. You are the literal High Lord. Like, what do you mean?
No, I thought he said it is banned. Like, it is banned, but they just aren't listening. Right?
I'll have to do my reread. I can't recall. I think it might be banned, but people start listening. But I'm like, dude,
like, I think the Illyrians specifically are the only ones.
Dude, every now and then, like, Aelin would nip it in the bud. So quick.
Oh, so quick. Okay, so I looked it up because I like want to be 100% sure. So yes, wing clipping is banned under the High Lord. And this is the internet. This is just Google. Okay, this is Google answer. Wing clipping is banned under High Lord Resand's rule in A Court of Thorns and Roses, though the practice unfortunately continued in secret or in specific camps, especially during Amarantha's reign, and to some extent even after Resand's return to power. Resand actually tried to end the practice to support female Illyrians. So it was, and just the Illyrians are like the ones not listening.
Yeah, and I feel like whenever we learn about Resand, especially maybe I think it's from Tamlin's point of view, whenever he's like saying like, oh, the Night Court is like all of these like very dark, bad people, and like they're in their own field. And they always talk about how powerful and how malicious Resand is. But then this is happening within his own court. So I'm like, make it make sense. If you're going to be this powerful High Lord with this big bad reputation, do it.
Like, yeah, it is interesting. And I don't want to say too many more things because like this part is no spoilers, which we put a spoiler in there, so my bad, we're hypocrites. So we suck. But
it's fine. It's like a little thing that's not like a spoiler for the whole entire story. It's just a little bit of,
yeah, just a little snippet.
Yeah,
a little, don't bit be mad.
Be mad. Whenever you read it, be mad.
I've also never met anyone who read Crescent City before they read ACOTAR. I don't know if you've ever met anybody that's done that. That's a wild ride.
I think I've met one person like in the comments who said that they read Crescent City first. I'm like, that's wow.
You can. I wouldn't recommend it, but you can. It's just a lot. Yeah. So anyways, I question again, like, is it all immortals that struggle with change or want change to be still? Or are they so used to it changing all the time that it's like no big deal, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Whenever I was thinking about it, because I don't know if you've ever watched, I don't watch a lot of TV, but every now and then I get roped into series. Did you ever watch Downton Abbey?
No, I'm crime show girly. Law and Order.
Definitely not crime show. But it's essentially this regency thing, and it starts in the 1920s, and then it escalates up through time. So you get to, like, it starts whenever the Titanic sinks, is, like, the show opening. But there's, like, this progression, and so you get the invention of electricity, you get the invention of the telegraph, and all of these things. Mm-hmm. And even, like, toasters, and the way that people freak out over a toaster.
Oh, I do love it. I do love a toaster.
So I'm just like, I want to know how like hesitant Hunt was, because man's old, and I want to know if he was like, oh my gosh, like what? Because he probably literally went from like ACOTAR technology,
yeah, like, all or the like way lack to of, yes,
cell phones, guns, toasters.
I mean, he still has a flip phone, for the record.
I love that.
He still has a flip phone. So I'm going to guess that he does not accept change as well as he probably could. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he was probably forced to learn how to use the computer.
Oh, 100%.
Like, someone's like, you have to learn this. Like, you're in the 33rd.
I could see him just being a crabby old man, too. Like, getting technology lessons. He's like, I don't need the internet.
Yeah, but this TikTok is ridiculous. This is stupid. I'm not doing this. He probably struggled. You're not wrong.
Hunt.
How funny.
Oh my gosh. But anywho, as they're doing their research on this vase depicting the Chrysalos, they are essentially talking again about an ancient library that exists in the heart of a pre-existing human civilization. Again, this is resulting to Parthos. He is wondering if, or they're both kind of wondering, if something like this existed, then where is the evidence? Sarah does an amazing thing. So, actually, I'll save it for theories and lore. Yeah, I'm going to save it for theories and lore.
Do you want to restart that line then?
Yeah. So, after Hunt kind of like clips Bryce about using computers, they get talking again about Parthos, and specifically they bring up an ancient library that exists in the heart of a pre-existing human civilization. And Hunt is even wondering if something like this existed, and if so, where's the evidence? Mm-hmm. And Bryce is like, yeah, I don't know, and just starts playing with her necklace as they're still continuing to look for all of these things. But as they're looking, Hunt asks Bryce how things are going with getting data from Deck about Danica's last known locations. And they find out that Danica was stationed around the temple the night the horn was stolen, and so was the acolyte. And again, it's important to know that there are no cameras specifically at the temple, mm-hmm. so they can only guesstimate where she was based off of the surrounding cameras.
Correct.
But Hunt does get a message from Victoria saying that Hunt and Bryce are clear to meet with Philip Briggs tonight. And Hunt warns Bryce that Briggs won't have nice things to say about Danica and asks if she can handle it. And then Bryce bites his head off about that, which I did not think was necessary. Yeah. And I want to know your thoughts, because I think this was his way of making up for accidentally taking her to the scene of the crime with the accolade. Yeah. And he was like, oh, I didn't know she would react this way. So I think like this was his way of just like giving her a heads up, being like, listen, like, I know this is a tough subject, but she's
so,
like,
here's my thoughts.
If I'm okay.
Here's my thoughts. I love that Hunt thought ahead and was like, hey, like, how are you feeling about this? Like, here's something I think that might happen. Like, is this going to be okay with you? I think that Bryce was in the right to speak that way. No. However, I relate to Bryce a lot of times because of these moments, because I think of like myself and my husband, and he would be like, hey, and I'd be like, don't even like, but like, I have done that. Like, I, you know, and I go back and I'm like, sorry. But there's been times where he was like, are you sure? And I was like, I'm sure. You know, and also like, I think that with, again, not like justifying Bryce's actions, but like, she is grieving so hard still to this day because she has not gotten closure. She has not gotten anything. She got belittled and bullied for 2 years. Like, she wasn't allowed to go to the sailing. Like, there were so many things that stopped her from being able to process this event that happened with this pack and her best friend and her, like, essentially like a soulmate to her, not like in a romantic way, right? Like, she clarified that like her and Danica weren't like soulmate. That, but I would consider them soul. Like, I would consider them soulmates, right? Like a soul friend. Right. You meet, like, you're lucky enough to meet a person in your life that you consider like a soulmate in the platonic way. Right. Not everybody even has that. So,
yeah.
Do I think that she was right? No. Do I understand
where she's
what
coming
she
from?
Was saying? Yes. 100%. Totally. So those are my thoughts. It's my TED talk.
I'm going to stay in my little Hunt Athalar corner.
Which is very, like I said, he's in the right. Like, he was so kind to say that. Like, I fully understand. And I'm not saying that Bryce Quinlan was right in that moment at all. I think that she was a little, I think she was too much. And I think she should have apologized, right? And not spoken to him that way. I'm just saying, like,
you got it.
From the, I get it. Like, I have been there and done that.
Oh, Bryce, the girly pop that you are.
She just makes mistakes.
Listen, as Hannah Montana says, everybody makes mistakes.
Everybody has mistakes.
And Bryce is having one of them. but Hunt says that they'll be leaving in 20 minutes, so be ready. And Hunt essentially goes and waits for her. And then Lily tries to talk Bryce into opening up and making friends, especially in Hunt and in Rune. And she says, Hunt is nice and Prince Rune is nice, but Danica was never nice to me, always biting and snarling, or she ignored me. And I find that so interesting because, listen, whenever I first started the book, not gonna lie, whenever Danica died, I was so mad because I was never party girl. I never did that. So, like, I didn't relate to Bryce, but I really wanted Crescent City to be Danica's story. And so whenever she died, I was like, it's going to be Bryce's. And I love Bryce, but I was like so sad that we weren't going to follow Danica, but in a way we still are. But the fact that whenever Lily says this, I was like, honestly, great question, because Lily is so nice. So I'm like, why would Danica be so short tempered with her?
Right. Yeah. Like, why did she treat Lahaba the way that she did? And we don't really get a lot more information about like Danica and Lahaba's relationship. So we don't really have an answer to that. But it is interesting to see Danica from different people's perspectives, right? Like who she was in Bryce's eyes versus who she was in Sabine's eyes versus who she was in Lahaba's eyes. Like, it's just, I feel like Danica has so many layers that we don't really have a good understanding of. But I don't like that she was mean to Lahaba. She loses points for me.
Yeah, she lost points for me too, because I was like, really? And then, of course, Bryce, because was so close, platonic soulmate, she also kind of goes off on Lily a little bit and just tells her to, like, drop it and don't ever talk bad about Danica that way. But again, as you were mentioning, and this is one thing that I do love about the series, is even though for this book most part we bounce back and forth between going into Bryce's head, Hunt's head, and Rune's head, I do like that as the story continues we get to see more people's perspectives and see how others viewed Danica.
Agreed. Yeah, no, 100%. So that wraps up chapter 34. Chapter 35, it is finally time to meet face-to-face with Philip Briggs. They are basically in a torture dungeon area because there's drains everywhere and the smell of bleach is everywhere. It's still, and I know Crescent City is in like modern day future times, or like cell phones, cars, all that stuff. It is still so wild sometimes when I'm reading to put my brain in and wrap my head around the fact that they like have bleach. There's just bleach for cleaning things, right? Like, we would clean stuff in our houses with bleach. And I'm just like, okay, yeah, there's cans of gasoline. Yes, there is gasoline there. And then, yes, there's bleach there, you know? So it's just, not that it's a bad thing, it just sometimes makes me laugh. So I just need to put it out into the world to really wrap my mind around it and then move on. So it's just funny. Crescent City. It's Crescent City box. So, so they got bleach everywhere. There's drains. They're cleaning all the icky stuff up. So Bryce is noting all of the lights and reminding us that when someone makes the drop, they give some of their first light to the government to power the city and basically et cetera, whatever they want with it. She notes that Hunt probably gave enough of his light to power a whole city and wonders what hers would go to when she finally made the drop herself, because you literally give like a little small ounce of whatever power, like it's a percentage, right? So because Hunt is literally so powerful, when he made the drop, he probably did give enough power to keep a city running for a while. So Bryce is like, I don't know how much I'll give to them, right? So they're finally in front of Briggs in the interrogation room, and he looks like he literally had the life sucked out of him. So he's like cleaned up, but he looks hollow, essentially. So Hunt starts a conversation, but is hoping that Bryce will ask her question first, because it's like just awkward silence. Everybody's just sitting there. Briggs asks what day and month it is, because he has no concept of time in prison. And I feel like that would be one of the hardest things about being in that type of situation, is you don't know what day it is. You don't know how many hours you've been in there. You don't understand the concept of time, or like the sun and the moon. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everything is blurry, which would be a struggle, I think, I think everything in there would be a struggle, but I think that would really be a struggle.
As someone who like thrives on knowing what time it is, I think I'd lose my mind.
Yeah. Right. And you don't get to see daylight or like anything like that.
Yeah. Which I thought was like, especially if like he ever went through a time, if he was ever like denied meals and you don't even have like the regulation of breakfast, lunch and dinner to like be like, oh, it's mid afternoon or it's morning.
Yep. And every minute feels like a freaking hour. Yes. Mm. Ugh. I feel like I would really struggle. So Bryce informs Briggs that the White Raven was bombed, and he connects the dots that for him that maybe it was his followers acting it out, like pulling off that bombing. So Briggs attempts to justify his cause to Bryce, like his rebellion cause, because her mother is human and she is half human, but Bryce is having none of it. Even though she like starts to think back on this and she thinks about how she witnessed her mother being mistreated in the past for being human. Mm-hmm. So instead of like asking a question or like him being like, well, I immediately was like, I didn't do this bombing. He immediately tries to like bring her over to his side, which is, I feel like, classic like cult manipulation. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's like he like deflects.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, actually, you probably could relate to this cause that I like am a part of still. So I feel like he really tried to take that opportunity, but she shot him down. So good job, Bryce. Philip Briggs then brings up an interesting comment that he actually liked Danica. Even when she arrested him, he still liked her. This obviously shocked Bryce, but he went on and he's telling her that when Danica and the pack were following his crew for weeks, she met up with him twice and gave him the chance to stop his plans and even told him how he could get himself less punishment if he did things the right way, right? So he thinks that Danica might have even been a sympathizer for his cause, and his followers knew that. So he even states that like she possibly let some of them go the night that they were all arrested. So she like went easy on them, which is really interesting. Those are very interesting thoughts. I want you to take that conversation, guys, and like really keep that in your mind. Just like let that simmer for a while. So Bryce claims that Danica was not one of them, but he counters that even if she wasn't one yet, she was probably on the way to becoming a sympathizer. Mm-hmm. His followers knew Danica was a potential asset, and he would never say anything to anyone about it because she would have been a really big ally. And he's not wrong, right? So like if Danica decided to be a sympathizer, it would have been a big deal because she was really powerful. She led the most powerful pack. And so if she was part of that, she would have helped them from the inside pretty tremendously. So no one was going to touch her because they knew that it would be a huge risk to their cause. So as Hunt is listening to Briggs go on about his cause and what it means to him, he wonders if he ever sounded just the same because he blindly followed Shahar into battle. Would he have even listened to anyone if they tried to tell him differently? And then we get a little snip of something interesting. Hunt's inner thoughts quickly tell us that Isaiah screamed at him in a war tent, but doesn't tell us anything else. And I don't think we ever actually come back to this, but I do feel like this is a moment to kind of reflect on who Shahar really was. So if you guys remember, Shahar was like Hunt's first love. Essentially, she was the archangel who was killed. She was the leader of a huge rebellion, which is like the reason that Hunt has like a crown on his head, the reason Lahaba doesn't have a house or any rights, like all of those things, right? So Shahar was like the leader of that. So it is interesting to see a small glimpse that maybe Shahar was making not necessarily the wrong choices, but like maybe she did move too fast or maybe things did happen because Isaiah at one point in time tried to stop Hunt from just following her without questioning anything ever. Like Hunt is a pretty smart guy. So like, I wonder what would have changed or where they would be at to this day if he would have been like, hold on, Shahar, like, let's talk about this. Would she have even listened? Right. Mm-hmm. Even though like, yes, he loved her. And it never says, if I remember correctly, it doesn't ever say that she loves him.
Yeah. It almost kind of sounds like a one-sided mate bond to me.
Correct. Like she was, at the end of the day, she was still an archangel. Yeah, I just don't know if Shahar really felt the feelings for him that he felt for her. So I can see why he would like be blindly following her, which is kind of unfortunate. So again, that's the only snippet we get at that. It was just something to kind of think about. So Bryce cut the meeting. She's like, I'm done, and attempted to leave quickly when Briggs tells Hunt he has a lot of respect for him and asked what part of the 18th he served in and called him brother, which, ooh. So Hunt left this meeting feeling like he was no better than that man. Hunt knew Briggs was telling the truth because he had been around enough men like that to know if they were lying. And what he means is he's been around enough people being tortured to know, like, the truth, basically. So Bryce could tell Hunt after that was in, like, a terrible mood and does try to pull him out of it, but he isn't even giving her an inch at first. Which, I understand that she doesn't want him to be upset, but, like, sometimes people just have to feel the feelings that they're feeling. We finally enter the moment that Bryce notices how good-looking and normal Hunt is, taking another photo of him and sending it to herself. And he takes another photo of her as well. So, like, the photo thing is very cute for them. Like, and they're continuing that where they, like, are taking photos of each other and things that, like, make them happy, which I think is really good healing for both of them. Mm-hmm. So Hunt finally opens up about how he is comparing himself to Briggs and how blind he was with Shahar and the war. He tries to open up but struggles. Bryce asks how long Hunt was in the Asteri prison for, and we learn it was 7 years in that prison. That prison in with the Asteri is so far beneath the earth that there is, again, no concept of time at all. Once he was done there after 7 years, he spent another 2 years with the same treatment with his first handler. So he went from the Asteri to his first handler with essentially 9 years without light, air, or flying at all, which is literally the three things an angel needs.
Yeah.
So it was at then, after the 9 years, that he was assigned to start killing demons that were coming through the rift. Bryce tries to reassure him that she sees him, the real him, and he is nothing like Briggs. Knowing now the Viper Queen is not a subject and neither is Briggs, they do need to continue their search from the list that Bryce created. The question is, maybe Danica and her Knight at the Temple might tell them something. So they need to, like, look more into that, because the avenues that they have chosen so far are not really working out. So Hunt all of a sudden says, like, wow, they are absolute idiots, right? And even though the Luna Temple doesn't have cameras on the inside, right, which is why it's, like, a good meeting place, it does have cameras near on the outside, like exterior cameras. And so it would have covered the whole thing that night. Why did no one see her come, like Danica come or go at all that night or come forward about it? Why didn't the acolytes say anything about her being at the temple the night that the horn went missing? Why is no one talking is a big question, right? Mm-hmm. The question that's also in the air is that, do we think that Danica knew who took the horn and is covering it up? To find the answer to this question, they do need to send the evidence of the video that night to someone who can run the test and tell them it for sure. And so that wraps up chapter 35.
Chapter 36 is kind of an iconic chapter within this book. There are, like, few things that, I mean, obviously, with any fantasy book, the last 10 chapters are always chaos and the most memorable. Mm-hmm. But the little bits are sprinkled in. Like, chapter 36 is very, very cutesy, very fun. So Bryce and Hunt get to the gun range eventually to meet up with Rune. But as they're putting on their tactical gear and their safety gear, because safety first, Hunt is glancing over his shoulder at Bryce, checking that her earmuffs are in place. And Bryce mumbles mother hen, and Hunt says, I wouldn't want your pretty little ears to get blown out, Quinlan. I know you're shaking your head, but again, I love. And I was,
he just doesn't know yet. He doesn't know, like, but her experience.
Will. Yeah. But as they're getting their tactical gear ready, they find Rune, Deck, and Flynn at the shooting range, kind of doing their own thing. They're taking bets on if they're going to miss and where they're shooting. But eventually Bryce tells Declan that she has a job for him and that she wants him to analyze the temple's footage during the blackout. She wants him to specifically look for any abnormalities, whether it's in the audio or in any of the thermal that was picked up, or a way to make the footage any clearer. Mm-hmm. So that is the job for Declan. Declan says he'll look into it the best he can, but no hopes or promises. And then, oh, how the turntables. Rune tells Bryce to show Hunt her artillery skills. And Bryce says, I don't need to prove I can handle a big gun to run with the boys club.
Yeah, girl, you tell him.
Yes, but Hunt, sweet baby boy. After she says this, Hunt's skin and other parts tighten at the feral delight in Bryce's eye when she says big gun. And Hunt, my guy. Like, not the time or the place. But to each their own.
Mm-hmm.
Hunt wonders how many alpha holes had run from this part of her due to threatened egos. Which question. I found that interesting because, I mean, like, I kind of get it because people with big egos, like, if you outshine mm-hmm. them, or especially the people that are like the, oh, let me show you, and they like reach over to like place your hands and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so I could get that. But then I would also, like, especially, I mean, Hunt just admitted it, that's a turn on for him. So I'm mm-hmm. also like, I feel like other people would be like, oh, a girl who knows how to handle a gun? Hello. What are your thoughts?
I have met both types of like men like that, right? Like I've met men, and when I say this, like, so she can like shoot big guns, right? And then I would think, oh, a lesser man would find that intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then I've met then like my husband who would be like, hell yeah. Right. Like, he resonates with Hunt a lot. Like, in these series and these books, I would say Hunt is probably one of his favorite Sarah J. Maas Aww. Characters. So like him being like, yeah, I wonder how many men ran from that, because there are men out, like, there are, and I guess not just men, like, there are
mm-hmm.
others, right, that sometimes are intimidated by something that you can do. Right. So like when a woman makes more money than you. Mm. A lesser man would be intimidated. A lesser man would run. Right? Instead of being like, you can be the breadwinner. Like, great. I love that for you. I love that you are smart and intelligent and successful. So I think it's a nod from Sarah showing that Hunt is
he's not a like good man.
Yes. Correct.
In a room of Hunt or a bear, I would choose Hunt.
Agreed. I mean, is the bear a baby bear?
No, you know, like the whole thing where people are like, if I had to choose between a bear or a man, I would choose the bear every time.
I haven't heard that. I thought you were if we're in a room and there's like a baby bear and there's Hunt, like, which one would I try and hug? I'd probably like.
No, there's always a thing where I see. Like, if men are acting like children, like, case in point, if they're like intimidated or like. What's the word, mansplaining, or just like being very degrading, and people are like, I had to choose between a man or a bear, I'd choose a bear. Most time I'm choosing bear, but in this case I'd run to Hunt.
That's so funny. No, I have not heard that. Another strike for old lady Dallas.
you'll find that on the TikTok.
Well, now I will.
Yeah,
now it's gonna be everywhere.
The bear.
No, phone, please don't. I just need one video. I don't need to see them all. Everything's fine.
Oh my okay. Gosh.
I would choose Hunt. I would not choose the bear today. Ask me again tomorrow. Okay. See how I feel.
Because then, like, it'd be, like, if I had to choose between Tamlin or the bear, I'm choosing the bear all day.
Yeah.
But anywho, they're at the gun range. Hunt's feeling all kinds of ways. And after Hunt goes through a round, he looks at Bryce to find her blushing. So Bryce is also reciprocating mm-hmm. the feelings.
Yeah.
We also get a little bit of an affection confession where Hunt holds Bryce's stare as to say, I see you, Quinlan, and I like it all. And essentially her stare back at him is kind of communicating right back at you. And it is so cute.
It is cute.
But then Isaiah calls and ruins the moment to report that there's been another murder found in Asphodel Meadows. And I'm like, Isaiah, we are having a cutesy moment.
Better ruin it. I'm
living my best life.
Sarah writes this for the hopeless romantics and then rips it away from them.
It was the one time that Bryce wasn't being rude to Hunt as he was flirting.
The one time. That's so funny. So yeah, that wraps up chapter 36. It's another like quick chapter, but it does have some good info in it. Has some lovey stuff in it for Madison. So chapter 37, Hunt was on the phone and informed the scene is 2 miles away. Last time, Hunt basically forced Bryce to go to the crime scene. But this time, as we know, he's learned his lesson. He can see her panicking about all of it and asks if she wanted him to go alone to the scene. And she shouldn't feel guilty for taking a moment to herself, even if bad things are happening around them. Because she's like, we shouldn't be here. We shouldn't be like shooting guns and having fun. Like, we should be out doing it. He's like, you can breathe and you can like live and be a person even though things are happening. So Bryce decides that she does not want to stay behind. She wants to go to the scene of the crime. So once she calmed down, they went to the scene and they arrived. Everything was taped off and everyone important was there. The techs are walking around, Rune and the guys are there. Everybody went to the crime scene. So the body was as bad as they thought it would be. It did look the same as the other one, so like as the pack and the other ones that were murdered. So we learned that the time of death was literally 30 minutes prior to where they were right now. So 30 minutes ago this happened, and the victim was a guard from the temple where Luna's horn was stolen. And this specific guard was working that night. So another very big piece of the puzzle. Somehow, the Crystallis demon knew where these victims were and also knew how to stay 100% detected every single time. And that is raising some serious red flags. Hunt brings up a theory that, like, gently, that's like, so the demon can go anywhere right now and has never been noticed and stay off all the cameras. In order to know where all the cameras are and all the things, they would need some pretty high clearance. Right? He like can't say it very loud, obviously, because there's some more important people around, but he's like, this seems a little bit like an inside job. Mm-hmm. A huge light bulb pops up in Bryce's brain and she's like, Main Street. So, and she looks at her map and she's looking at where all of the murders happened, right? And she states that once you link them all together, every one of them is right next to a major avenue, such as Main Street. Each one, like, lay right on a ley line where the mm-hmm. first light travels through the cities, essentially, like if you're looking at the map, almost like the power lines, the power grid, right? And it travels through the cities. So essentially a highway of power flowing through each gate. So whoever is summoning this demon could essentially be drawing power from these ley lines to be able to have enough power to do the summoning. So now they need to look at the cameras on certain streets where the ley lines cross and see if there's any small blips of power that can be seen. Like a tiny little beep, because it's not going to be anything big. Otherwise, they would have seen it already, right? Mm-hmm. And it's legit an iconic scene in my brain that popped up of like detectives staying up all night watching crappy camera footage with like a cup of coffee and a white styrofoam cup. Like the iconic scene. But that's essentially what they're doing. They need to look at all these camera footage and see what's happening. They also need to see if the temperature drops at any moment as well, because if the demon is coming through, the temperature will be colder. So even if the demon is out of sight there, something has to be off as it passes. Once Hunt and Bryce left the scene, Hunt does an alpha hole move and asks her if her and Finn ever hooked up.
I wouldn't say that's alpha hole. I just say that's him being nosy after he got all hot and bothered at the gun range.
Oh, I see. Okay. I can kind of see it that way. Because he's like he flirts with her. Like Flynn flirts with Bryce all the time. Mm-hmm. And I did sense a teensy bit of jealousy. Like,
I wouldn't say he wasn't not jealous, but mm-hmm. I think it was mostly him being nosy. I wouldn't say it was like full alpha hole.
You're probably not wrong. But either way, her and Flynn never hooked up. And she did have that, like, younger sister crush on him, like, way back in the day. But she never hooked up. She did, however, hook up with a vampire one time. And that has been her only hookup in the House of Flame and Shadow. So, like, she's, like, thinking back on, like, when she was younger.
And she's like, well, there was a vampire one time, but I like wasn't. She like wasn't a fan. She's like, I wasn't into that. And that was the only hookup in the House of Flame and Shadow.
But I did find her childhood crush on Flynn super cute because said that she would write in her notebook. What's his last name? Tristan Flynn?
Yeah, Tristan Flynn. And I think she was like, Mrs. Bryce Flynn.
Yeah.
It was really cute. And we've all been there.
Because he's a lord, or he will be a lord. Dad is a lord. So I think she'd like write like Lady Bryce.
Yeah, that's super cute. And we've all been there. We've all written in our notebooks.
I don't think I have.
No, because you were too busy. You were reading.
Yeah, probably. I was writing it down in my head, but
she's like, it's up here.
I'm no rookie. I don't leave evidence around.
Oh, I was writing everywhere. I was like, like writing my notebook all the time. Oh, yeah.
In my head.
I probably watched too many movies. That's funny. So, yeah, they never got together. So Hunt's like, okay, check that box. Feeling good. He's feeling better anyways. So he mentions that he doesn't really have anyone in his past worth mentioning because Shahar ruined him for everyone else. He, again, grew up in her legion and he fell completely in love with her. Which we have talked about. We talked about prior, right? So Shahar told Hunt that he could be more than he was. And so she raised him through her ranks in the military, essentially. Bryce asks if Hunt was still in love with Shahar. And he tells her that he will feel the same until he dies. She gave up everything for him and the cause. Did she give up everything for him? Or did she give up it for the cause?
Think she gave it up for the cause, but you know what made me really sad? Spoilers for Throne of Glass, but it kind of reminded me of I wouldn't necessarily call it a triangle, but there was like that period where Lorcan like had a thing for Maeve. And I'm not saying like Shahar's evil because they did have a just cause and they were trying to make the world better. But it was kind of giving me like Lorcan and Maeve the way Hunt is for Shahar.
Yeah, just like blindly in love and following. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Like, I can see that reference. Oh, I do love some Lorcan. So all of this information does put Bryce back a bit emotionally because she thought just maybe he wasn't all that bad. So she's like starting to kind of see little bits and pieces of him that are good. So as the emotion was happening, unfortunately, Sabine shows up, of course. And if you need a reminder, this is Danica's mother. We don't like her. So Sabine is obviously super rude immediately and asks Bryce where Danica's sword is again. We're not answering that question still. Bryce is like, she doesn't say anything. She just deflects immediately. So the question is still not answered of where the sword is. So Sabine calls her a ton of names and Bryce just wants to leave. She's like, let's get out of here. Hunt is super amped up. She's trying to calm him down. And then they both finally fly away. Thank goodness. So they get back on the roof of the house, like of the apartment, and Declan calls Bryce. He found something in the footage that was sent to him. After getting distracted that Hunt was hot AF, right? She's like super distracted over it. She finally comes back to reality and realizes what's happening with this camera footage. So Deck states that it could be a mistake, but after isolating the sounds, he finds a couple of voices laughing and daring people to touch the dial at the Rose Gate in Fyro, which is, again, five roses, all the way at the temple. This is a problem because those two things are nowhere near each other, right? So someone swapped the footage that night of the horn, like the night that the horn went missing. Whoever did this is good because this is not something that the 33rd caught. The question of who was like there or in charge of things was answered pretty quickly because we know now that Sabine Fendier was the lead on the video footage investigation that night and immediately became suspect number one. And that is it ends up chapter 37, but it also wraps up part two of the book. So now we are entering part three, The Canyon.
Yes. And chapter 38 is kind of short and essentially just there to solidify that they think that Sabine is the main suspect. So they kind of go over their reasoning behind why. So essentially, Sabine is the prime suspect because they now caught her, or they have very, very high suspicion that she was the one who tampered with temple footage. She is the prime apparent wanting to tap Danica over Sabine. So that would be Sabine's motive for wanting to get rid of Danica, even though Danica was her daughter. Also, all of Sabine's words from the interrogation room over in chapter 6, because Sabine essentially said Danica couldn't stay out of trouble. She never kept her mouth shut and knew when to keep quiet around her enemies, and look at what became of her. And then she goes on to calling Bryce's name, saying that Danica is dead, but Bryce is still alive. Danica should have known better, all of it, starting with that slut of a roommate. Essentially, again, everything is pointing to possibly Sabine being the one to have killed Danica, and essentially for possibly threatening about talking about the horn. So not only is it suspecting that she killed Danica, but it's also suspecting that maybe Sabine is the one who took the horn as well. And the motive for taking the horn could all lead back to essentially her hatred towards Micah. And she could be doing this in order to dethrone him and make him looking bad, specifically in front of Sandriel. And essentially, because Sandriel falls under the Asteri, maybe having Sandriel take Micah's place if they're able to show that Micah just does not have power over his territory that he is reigning over.
Mm-hmm.
The only quip that I have with this chapter, Sarah, if you are watching, listen, I don't yuck anyone's yum. I listen and I don't judge. However, why did we have to make Hunt a foot and toe guy? I don't yuck anyone's yum. However, a little bit of yuck. Because if you want to open your Bible to page 371.
Oh, we're really getting into it. Okay, all right. 2 seconds. What page am I going to?
371. You don't have to relive it, but if you want to know, like, what does she make him a foot guy? The proof is in the pudding on that page. Okay,
371.
Yeah. They're essentially talking about an explanation for why Sabine would want to swap the footage. And as Bryce is talking, she is... Not my words. It says, Bryce mused, toying with her toes. They were painted a deep ruby. Ridiculous, he told himself. Not the alternative. The one that had him imagining tasting each and every one of those toes before slowly working his way up those sleek, bare legs of hers. Bare legs that were mere inches from him, golden skin gleaming in the first light. He forced himself to withdraw his hand from her knee, even as his fingers begged to move to stroke along her thigh higher. Thigh? Yes. Toes? No. Please.
Yeah. That's... I love that you are so upset about it.
Listen, again, I don't typically yuck anyone's yum, but...
I can't do the ick?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Don't touch my toes.
People make good money.
Listen, don't touch my toes. Has the thought come up? Because people do be making bank with feet pics.
Mm-hmm. She's not here for it. She has limits.
I have limits, but like, people do make a lot of money with that.
Mm-hmm, they sure do. That's hilarious. Yes. I digress. Hunt is a good guy. There's nothing we can do about it. It is what it is.
Anywho, gross. I'm sorry to anyone who has a foot fetish. As they're talking, Bryce is essentially just getting annoyed and wants to go on a run. And Hunt's like, it's like the middle of the night. What do you mean? And she says that she needs to clear her head. So essentially they go for a run, but the chapter ends specifically with Hunt kind of taking notice of the scar on Bryce's thigh and him kind of asking questions about it and saying like, well, isn't the run going to hurt? And she's like, no, it's fine. And then he even asked like, oh, well, have you ever gotten it checked out? And she's like, yeah, duh, of course, thighs. So essentially the chapter ends with them talking about her thigh and the lack of things that she's actually done to help it. Mm-hmm. We will learn more about her scar in future chapters, but that is essentially where this one ends.
Bam. You're guided to her through Crescent City.
It ends with complete. A suspect and with toes.
With toes. She's never going to get over that.
Nope.
Ugh, I love it. It is what it is. He's a toe guy. There's lots of them out there. You do you, boo. It's not for Madison, though.
No, not my fetish.
All right, so if you are sticking around, we are about to head into the House of Theories and Lore, which is where we talk about all things spoilers from the entire mass first. So if you are not ready to enter the House of Theories and Lores, pause your episode right here and come back when you are done with the entire series of Crescent City and Throne of Glass and ACOTAR. Did you enter our giveaway with Wonderwick yet? If you did, but you still want to go and grab a few things for yourself, make sure to check out her website and use the code GOODISHGIRLS10 at checkout for 10% off your entire purchase. All right. Welcome to the House of Theories and Lore. Again, this is spoiler, spoiler, spoilers. So if you're not ready for that, then exit out. If you are ready for that, welcome. Here we go. So my question, it comes from like earlier in our episode, like who is the Oracle really? Right. Again, I don't have an answer for this, but I do have some thoughts. So the Oracle, it says that the Oracle smiled a smile that did not wholly belong in this world. I do find it interesting that you had mentioned like that the Oracle and the cereal would get along very well for tea time. I don't have any evidence of it, but I do wonder like, are they related. Maybe related, or like, is there some correlation there between being able to like see things in the future or like know things that not everybody else knows, such as the cereal and such as the Oracle?
Yeah, because I also find it interesting to note that Hunt mentions going to the Oracle, but Rune mentions, I'll try to find it real quick. Maybe you recall the name. It's the people that can actually see the future.
Like a seer?
No, because Elaine's a seer, but it's what the one girl was in book 2 that Ethan kidnaps/saves. Because Rune's like, oh, you'd have better luck seeing those people versus the Oracle.
Hold on. Yes, you know I know exactly what you were talking about.
Because I find it interesting that Rune said, like, oh, you'd have better luck going to them versus the Oracle. Because I feel like that almost solidifies the mythics.
The mythics.
So I feel like it almost solidifies that, like, Oracles/Cyrils are just like kind of iffy in the information that they give.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I like to leave that like little connection in the air. So mm-hmm. We literally don't get any more information about this Oracle who is a Sphinx or where they are from. Or maybe if they're even from this realm or this world. We know that they are really, really rare. And we know that they are called to the services of the gods. And it says gods, and I say all gods? Question mark. Nobody knows their true name. They are only known as their title as Oracle. So we literally know nothing about them at all.
Kind of like with the cereal.
And I kind of question, could the Oracle be acting in the favor of the Asteri We know that Bryce blinded them with her light and therefore they could not see her future. If the Oracle would have been able to see what Bryce was going to do to stop the Asteri, would it have been more harmful? Because if they are on the side of the Asteri, would they have seen her coming?
I am going to hold my ground with the whole unreliable source, because even like whenever Rune got his true reading that just mm-hmm. says that the Starborn line would end with you.
Yep.
Like she also doesn't specify then like what she mean. We learn what it means later, but like Rune is like, doesn't mean I'm infertile. Doesn't mean I'm going to die. Like he doesn't know. And she doesn't care right. to specify that at all either. So I don't know if she would have been able to see that Bryce was going to take down the Asteri, more or less just seeing her power mm-hmm. and how much power she has. Because again, like I mentioned back in the day before the Oracle was used just to determine a career path, it was used to see the amount of power that people would ascend to during their drop. Mm-hmm. So I think like the Oracle is able to continue talking after being blinded, I don't think that they would have specified that Bryce could have taken down the Asteri. But maybe if the Oracle is in cahoots, maybe just like give a warning that there's a Starborn chick running around.
Yeah. Something.
But, yeah.
That's interesting. And she also says, like, to Hunt, she says, you remind me of that of which was lost long ago. I had not realized it might ever happen again. So she doesn't really allude to what she's even talking about, right? So what I do know is that the lost princes of hell, we learn that the Oracle is alluding to the princes of hell who were lost when they couldn't return from the rift. Hunt's power and existed reminded her of them. That's what we know. Did he just remind her of them, or does she know who Hunt really truly is in that moment?
I think she might have an idea, because she does know that his name is Orion, and that's right. something that no one knows mm-hmm. or calls him aside from his mom, who passed. Correct.
Yep. So I find it very interesting. So that's why I mm-hmm. wonder if she is truly, like, if she is a non-reliable source, or if she is a reliable source, she just says information in a weird way.
Again, it's right? giving stay with the High Lord.
Yeah, exactly, right? She also says, do yourself a favor, Hunt Athalar, and keep well away from Bryce Quinlan. Why do we think Hunt never mentions this to Bryce? Did the Oracle say this because she blinded them, or is it actually for the safety of Hunt?
Well, she never specified, but she did tell him to stay away.
Right. That's what I'm saying. She was like, keep well away from Bryce Quinlan.
Again, I think she's just trying to stir the teapot.
I don't know. Something about the Oracle is so weird to me.
Again, it's very, very serial of her.
Yes. You're not wrong. I want to know what, if you guys have any thoughts, like, put them in our comments, drop them in our DMs. Like, what do you guys think is the real truth about the Oracle? Or do you think we'll even go back to the Oracle at any point, like, in future books?
Yeah.
Or was this just, like, a one-off?
I still stand by that this is the smartest thing that the Oracle said to Hunt, because, again, I love Bryce, but every now and then there were times where I'd butt heads with her, because, like, especially in book two, like, essentially, mm-hmm. after this, the Asteri is like, listen, we're cool with you as long as you stay out of our business and you stay under the radar. You can live your life. However, mm-hmm. boom, Hunt, you're free. Just like live a peaceful, quiet life, which is all Hunt wanted. And then Bryce is like, hey, so I found something new out. Let's go on another adventure that is very illegal. And Hunt's just like, but peace and quiet. And Bryce is like, no. And then there is another thing. I know I have it saved somewhere, but there is one thing that she says specifically in the third book that had me raging at her, and we will get there. But yeah, sometimes I feel like whenever she just like lets anger and rage take over, sometimes she takes a little too far. And there was one thing that she says in book three that was too far for me, and I was so mad. We will get there, don't you worry.
So you're saying that the Oracle gave that warning because of who Bryce is as a person, not because she can see the future and she sees something bad happening.
Yes. Yes. I'm sticking with yes.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
My man just wanted peace. He just wanted to live a happy life and watch Sunball until the day he dies.
I do wonder, though, if it is, like, because the fact that she is Starborn. And again, does the Oracle even know? Because she was technically blinded, but, like, the Oracle is not stupid, right? Like, can it not tell that that's Starborn light? Or was it just, like... I've never seen this before. What is that? So I don't know.
Interesting. Maybe she knows. Because I feel like starborn light and just like normal light is different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Especially like the Oracle
knows.
Yeah. So like maybe she knows, but maybe she just has like a crumb of confidentiality in her.
Maybe. Well, she tried, right? She was like, do you want to know what I saw with Bryce Quinlan? Do you want to know? And I think she was trying to be like, this girl is starborn, right? Like, I think she was trying to plant those seeds.
But I
and
still...
Hunt was like, no thanks.
Ooh, this brings up a really interesting point. Because I feel like either maybe she was going to tell him, or maybe... That's so interesting because it's reminding me of the Cyril. Do you say cereal or Cyril?
Cereal.
Okay. I feel like I've been saying it so many different ways just because I'm like, I don't know. But I feel like because even the cereal was iffy with the whole stay with the High Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So that mentality sticks with me for... Bryce never really got a reading because the Oracle was blinded. Rune did get a very iffy reading, so that's giving very stay with the High Lord. But the fact that the Oracle is like, do you want to know like what I told Bryce and all that jazz, it's reminding me of when the Cyril tells Feyre, spoiler alert for Akamath.
We are in spoilers. This is all kidding. Spoilers.
I forgot
they
where
should
we were.
Know now.
I forgot where we were. It's fine. It's reminds me of Akamath whenever the Cyril was like, if you want to save your mate, then like do this thing. And Feyre was like, my who? And the Cyril's like, oh, my bad. So maybe they're selective in who they possibly reveal truths to.
Right. Like, yeah. Like that's the Cyril, like, in that story, like, Rhysand mentions, like, I've tried to capture that Cyril a couple of times and I've never been successful. Yeah. How did you do it? Right? So, like, the Cyril sees something good in Feyre and then therefore allows itself to be captured. So I wonder if – that brings up a good point. Like, does the Cyril see something in Hunt and is like, let me give you this little tidbit. Let me give you this information.
I want to say yes then.
I would like to say yes. And I – maybe it saw something it didn't like in Bryce, besides obviously being blinded immediately and, like, being in a lot of pain. But I wonder if it saw anything before that or, like, they talked to Bryce before, right? I mean, she was just a teenage girl. Like, I'm sure she wasn't rude.
I'm pretty sure, if I had to guess, in, like, Bryce's Oracle meeting, it was probably just, like, a little, I don't know, like, you know how in doctor's offices or like where like they kind of just do like the little rundown and then they get into the nitty gritty. I feel like they probably have like a little rundown conversation. And the Oracle's like, okay, let's see what you have. boom, mm-hmm. light. So, like, never got to actually discuss what it saw.
Right. And then maybe it was mad, like, holding a grudge.
100%, I think this. Because even I think Bryce mentions, I don't think I said it in the chapter specifically, but I know that Bryce did say somewhere that maybe the Oracle is still holding a grudge.
Right. Yeah. So therefore, it saw something in Hunt and was like, I'm going to try to help you out because there's something wrong with this girl.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. All right. Yeah. I want to know everyone else's thoughts on what or who the Oracle truly is, or if there is a serial relation.
That's going to be my crack theory, is that they're distant cousins.
Mm-hmm. They're distant cousins twice removed.
Yeah. The only thing I really had to add is the Easter eggs that Sarah places in this book, because now that I have read all of the books, I have mm-hmm. the little Infinity Gauntlet. I can appreciate things. And I think it was chapter 34. Mm-hmm. So whenever, yes. So in chapter 34, whenever they are talking about Parthos, and Hunt is essentially wondering about the rumor of an ancient library existing in the heart of a pre-existing human civilization, and literally the sentence right after is Bryce playing with the Arkisian amulet, which we learn later at the end of the book, whenever all of the things are thinging, that library is real, and it is Jezva's library at Griffin's Antiques. Mm-hmm. And I used my map, Dallas.
I'm so proud of you.
Whenever you look at the map, Griffin Antiques, it's not like dead center, but that's like still relatively as close to the center as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But location's there. And then Hunt makes the connection that the Arkisian amulet is kind of like what, essentially the same symbol that a priestess would wear, especially like whenever they're at Luna's temple, there specifically to gauge like the priestess's level of succession, it's mm-hmm. by whatever phase of the moon is at their little pendant. But the Arkisian amulet is essentially like the library / temple's rune, I guess.
Yeah.
And the fact that that is there, like the first sentence after he says, where's the evidence, and she's like, I don't know, I'm just gonna play with this thing. But not only that, also in chapter 36, I believe this is the third time that the tattoo parlor has been mentioned. And we know that the tattoo parlor is a very big deal because that's where the horn was tattooed into Bryce. And it still boggles my mind that the 33rd did not bother to look into this place. They literally check every single place except for this tattoo parlor.
Yep.
It boggles my mind.
The 33rd messes up a lot, to be honest
with
you.
The 33rd does an awful job at their job.
They be dropping a lot of things.
The only thing they're good at is Hunt and his ability to annihilate threats deemed by Micah.
This makes me wonder how many crime shows Sarah watches, because they're so... The TV crime shows that I watch are, like, so accurate. Where they're like, did you not go to the police about this? And they're like, I did. Or they didn't care. They didn't look at it. Or they didn't do this with it. Or they lost the evidence. Or it was mm-hmm. tampered with. Or whatever. Like, it's so spot on that I wonder if she's like a Law and Order girly.
Maybe. I did go through like a teeny tiny crime show phase whenever I was in high school. I would watch Criminal Minds. And I would try to piece it together before the things happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to college where I lived alone in a dorm. I'm like, I'm not going to watch anything
yes,
about
the paranoia.
Me getting kidnapped. 100%.
Yep.
So I'm like, me on my own, new city, new college. No, thank you.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
But yeah.
Oh, I love some crime shows. All of them.
Love Spencer Reed, too.
Anyone who doesn't love Spencer Reed, I don't trust. So.
That's valid.
Like, if you don't, I don't know. We can't be friends.
It's qualification. True. That's valid.
Yeah, right?
I love that man.
He's the best. Him
and the relationship between Penelope and Derek.
Oh, so cute.
I love their flirty, witty
The show's banter. Back. You know that, right? It got canceled.
Because it got canceled.
Mm-hmm. It got after like a million seasons. Yeah, so like they wrapped it up. And then they made like almost like a spinoff, but with mostly the same characters and then some new ones as well. Like JJ there is, Penelope's there.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's like quite a few of them that are there. It's like Criminal Minds Evolution. And it's real good. I should restart the series. No, I don't have time for that. Never mind. I'm not going to do that. I should, but I won't. Amazing. Well, those are what I have. I want you guys to sit with that for like this week and talk about or think about like who the Oracle truly is. I love it, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week in our episode of our deep dive of Crescent City. That was House of Theories and Lore. We will see you guys next week with a very special guest. I'm not going to tell you who it is, though. You'll have to just wait and see. Well, thank you guys so much. Again, my name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
We'll see you later. Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No.